You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Amber Harris. Amber, it's good to have you here this morning.
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having me.
So, Amber, the way we start the show is, and this show is a show about modeling, getting to know each other across differences and people who don't know each other. Who are you? What do we need to know about the qualities you aspire to live, some of the labels you wear, some of the places you've been? What do we need to know to start the conversation?
What a fabulous question. So I would introduce myself as Amber Sky Harris, businesswoman, activist, and artist. I am a writer and a painter, and I paint with watercolors, and I tend to write in the form of poetry. So that is a short synopsis.
Okay, what is the slightly larger?
I'm also an Ithaca and Spencer native. I grew up in this region. Graduated from IHS in 1996, and I'm a traveler. I moved out west, lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico for 15 years prior to returning back home for 2 years, and then making the cross-country journey to Davis, California and Oakland area for another 2 to 3 years, and I'm now back. I'm so excited to be back home. I missed the lushness of the green, amazing green in the summer, which I'm looking forward to right now tremendously.
Right. Yes, you are. You hold things visually.
Yes, this is true.
And I, in California, I mean the weather is beautiful, but it's not as lush as the mountains in Colombia where I lived briefly for 6 months, where it's 70 or 80 degrees year round.
Is so, it emerald green? Is it Irish green? Is it Kelly green?
It's, it's about 1,000 different shades of green. If you've the space of time here in early May. When everything just pops, you end up with yellow greens to deep greens and about 1,000 different shades for just about a month or two before things get dried out.
Right.
In Missouri, it's even more pronounced because you go from a harsher winter to a cooler spring where things explode even more aggressively than they do here. But anyway, I'm rambling.
I love it.
You brought some poetry and some music with you.
I did.
Will you share it with us as we start?
I will. And so this first poem I wrote in January of 2017, and it's called Preparing to Be. Preparing to Be. Sundown and the beat on the street makes me want to work hard, makes me want to stay mean, stay tough, stay soft, stay lean. Battening down, buttoning up, readying myself to support and lead, readying myself for whatever strength I may need, readying myself for vigilance, for kindness, for awakenedness, for planting seeds, for loving you and loving me, for loving any space between, the kind of fierce love that leaves no page unturned, no heart untouched. I love deep, I lead free, and I say what I mean. Let us lead in strength. Let us lead in fierce compassion. Let us lead by example. Feel the beat. Feel the heat. It's time to prepare and become who we knew we could be.
And my response is, because of the way you laid those paradoxes, it's that fierce love that does not let terror overwhelm it.
Right. Exactly. And I would say it's making friends with terror, making friends with fear.
Yes. That's very powerful. You brought some music. You wanted to open with Long Cool Woman in a Black Dress, The Hollies.
So, I love this song.
So do you want to say anything about it or just let it speak for itself? Or?
So I grew up with two parents who were children of the 60s, and I don't remember when I came across the song, but I thought it was such an elegant mixture of really great lyrics that are visually evocative, great music, and just a neat, uplifting, kind of snazzy tune. So I love it.
Okay, here we go. Thank you. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Amber Sky Harris. did you go by Sky earlier?
So my mom picked out my middle name, and I rather like it. I had a middle school teacher, or was he high school? Mr. Salisbury at DeWitt, who just called me Sky. Like, yeah. He liked my middle name so much. He was like, I'm calling you Sky. And I said, all right, I'm down with that. Yeah. Let's do that.
So, what I'd like to go next is, given the life that you value now, and I understand you have been through major moves and transitions, but given the life that you value now, what are some of the lessons or things you've had to learn to know that you need to live that life now?
So this has been a profound couple of years in me, both in super sped up growth, loss, and self-awareness building. I suffered a major illness last year, and so the major takeaway lesson for me was how to pump the brakes. I've always been pretty driven. I've always been the hammer, you know, hammering the nail and just relentless in my drive for success. And this was the first time I really had to stop. I had no options. I had no choice but to stop or continue to be very, very unwell and have my health in grave danger. So I stopped running and stood still and went and took a real close look at my life, what was defining success for me and whether that matched where I was now. And I found that I wanted a different definition. I wanted to be more mindful. I wanted to slow down. I didn't want to be anxious. I wanted to slow myself and be able to be more present in my life.
Right. And I hear that there are kind of two things at play here. There's the success, which is the goal, but there's a drive, and which is that force. And how did you change the notion of a goal, or you became more conscious of your choice?
Right.
With a goal. But how did you address the drive? Because that's oftentimes what gets us tied up in knots. We just aim it at something else.
Yeah. So most of my close friends and family and my tribe, as I like to call them, would agree that I can just be sort of given an assignment. It's as good as done.
Yeah.
I'm an implementer. And so for all of you folks interested in the Myers-Briggs thing, I'm a ENF J.
Yes, you are a J kind of problem. I'm a J off the charts. I was a J off the charts.
They,
I am not so much.
They call me the protagonist. Yeah. Is the other name for that.
So. And what are the initials again?
ENFJ.
Yeah.
So, but it's an interesting balance of taking stock, and in this case, my health. I was forced to just sort of hit the bottom of the well, rest there, look at why I had been running around so quickly. What was I avoiding? What was I running from? And did I want to do that anymore? Did I want to hold those same stories, or did I want to write new stories?
Okay. So how do the stories hold the energy that fires your life? So, and how did you change the, what were the stories, and how did you change the stories?
So I think one of the stories that I was telling myself without realizing it was that I wasn't good enough, or that I was not, you know, measuring up, that I had to work really hard to measure up.
Is there an imposter thing going on there, or is that, or you just weren't good enough?
This is just, I think a lot of us, self-brutalize or bully ourselves without really hearing that inner voice clearly and realizing that it's optional, that it does not have to be the default.
Right.
And so I found that I was incredibly hard on myself and hard on other people close to me, and that I had these unrealistic expectations, wanting things to be done right away, wanting things a certain way. I wanted... You know, I became an executive director of a local Montessori school. I thought, well, this is it. I'm an executive director. Now I've arrived and I can help these teachers and I can help these children. But it wasn't completely altruistic. I mean...
Right. And did you drive them nuts?
Well, so I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask them.
No. Sometimes when we're on our own agenda, it does drive other people nuts.
It was a very tough situation that I walked myself into. And I knew pieces of the complexity, but I quickly learned the fullness of it by interviewing each of the teachers and sitting with each teacher for a half hour and saying, you know, tell me about what's going on. What's your classroom like? What's your daily routine like? So that helped me get a clear picture of the situation, and it was very different than what I had anticipated.
Right.
And so I found myself looking at a much more complex, multifaceted puzzle, which I love, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
However, I had just come out of a 7-year relationship that ended. I had just moved across the country. I had 3 family members pass that year. A niece who overdosed unexpectedly, who was 21. And so things just stacked up for me, and eventually I just collapsed under the weight. But it ended up being this incredible blessing, this incredible gift, because for 40 years, I hadn't stopped really in this way to say, hey, where am I going? Is this what I want? Is this how I want to live my mm-hmm. life? Is this how I want to be in my body and my life? And the answer was like, no, I'd like to adjust this mm-hmm. to something that's more sustainable, where I can really enjoy being present and being in my body and moving around the world in a more mindful way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what are the habits of thinking that you had to face, and what are the stories that you've? I'm asking 2 questions at once, mm-hmm. but I want us, because I think there's a linkage here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the habits of thought that you've had mm-hmm. to kind of challenge yourself on, and then what are the stories or the strategies you've had to adopt?
Right. So here's kind of how this went down. I stopped sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking like for 6-7 months, where I was getting 2 or 3 hours a night,
yeah.
which means I was basically walking around hallucinating. And so I had a clean slate, because I kind of lost my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And so
if you weren't going to give it up, it was going to
I mean, it was, people thought I had leukemia. Like, I had to go get a CAT scan because my white blood cell counts were so high. Nobody knew what was wrong with me. I was seeing all these specialists. And my body inflammation was out of control. I lost 30 pounds over, you know, like 4 months. I was losing 3 pounds a week at one point. And I was eating consistently, but I wasn't sleeping, so I couldn't right. absorb the nutrients.
Right, right.
So I finally just had to stop thinking about that I was going to somehow beat this, or that I wasn't really sick. You know, I was in this denial. And I felt like Alice in Wonderland falling down the rabbit hole, except that I was holding on to people and doctors and just old beliefs and just anything that would prevent me from hitting the bottom, because that was so terrifying for me to give up control and just sort of sit with it.
So what was the bottom? What was the sit with it?
The bottom was the weekend I thought I had leukemia. I mean, I didn't know what was going on. I was waiting for test results. I had done a CAT scan. And that weekend, none of my family was available. And this is right. This is when you find out who your tribe is.
Mm-hmm.
So wonderful friends of my family who I've known since 7th grade flew my friend, one of my dear friends, Susie, out from North Carolina to be with me during the 4 days when I had to go to all these follow-up tests, these follow-up meetings to find out, did I have cancer? And I'm not sleeping still. I have doctors trying every different medication. They're having wicked side effects that are preventing me from sleeping.
Right.
And I had crossed this threshold into sort of like where I couldn't really tell if I was awake or asleep most of the time, just because it felt like one long waking dream.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the bottom of that well was beautiful in a lot of ways, because I finally said, okay, I'm sick. Whatever it is, if it's cancer, if it's something else, if it's Lyme's disease, whatever it is, I'm going to take care of myself. Like, my health has to right. become the priority.
Right. I can't be sick.
And so
the rest of my life.
And so it was a surrendering. It was like, okay, I am going to take care of myself. And if that means I can't do my career, or it means I have to start really focusing on slowing down and looking at, like, how do I sleep again? How do I, in this case, I had to eat all the time for a while, basically.
Yeah, I know. You lose that kind of, I mean, I lost 40 pounds in my first 2 years of college and was emaciated.
Yeah.
I went down to 125, and that's, I can't crazy. Carry 125.
No, you're a tall guy.
So it's like I had to figure it out.
Yeah. So then you reprioritize, and you're like, okay, if my health is really my priority, and not just my physical health, but my spiritual, mental, emotional health, what does that mean? How do I redesign my life around that?
Mm-hmm.
It was really humbling. And those people showed up for me, my friends, my family. My stepmom let me move in with her for, I'm sure, what we thought was going to be the summer, but it was a year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I was not safe to be alone. There was some concern I would be sleepwalking or sleep driving.
Right.
And it's beautiful then extended family or people just check on me or drive me out to the nutrition clinic or, I mean, listening. I have a mentor who's my stepdad who's just the most amazing listener and reflector mm-hmm. back, mm-hmm. you know.
And in times like this, you discover that your community often is those people who have been watching from the sidelines but who have an investment in your doing well.
Yeah, it's a generosity. It's a real reciprocity. And these are folks who maybe I have been there in the past for them, or maybe I will be there for the future, or maybe they're just paying it forward.
Maybe you'll never, but I, and this is where just a little bit of pedantic word stuff. It's mutual.
Right.
And reciprocal, that's oftentimes drifts into contractual, which sure. means tit for tat. And we don't do that.
No.
Not when we really love somebody.
Right.
It's mutual. And whether it ever gets paid back or whatever, it's right. it's created a space of holiness or goodness or wholeness.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it blew my mind. And I met some amazing new community members and, mm-hmm. and found new community and found ways to give back. And that has been another huge focus is gratitude. My sense of gratitude has grown enormously. Mm-hmm. And so my desire to give back to the community has grown. And I find my voice, my inner voice has changed and become more compassionate. And I still have this sort of managerial voice, but I also have more kindness towards myself. Mm-hmm. And so that ripples out in becoming increased kindness for others. And I have more awareness around when I'm not listening or when I'm not present.
Right, right, right. Well, gratitude forces you to stop and notice.
Hmm.
And the propensity to move on means you don't reflect upon or take the time to appreciate what you've just been through.
Hmm.
One of my seminary professors said, the work is not done until you have rested from it.
Ooh.
Which is the reading, her interpretation of why the seventh day is the day of rest. It allows us to bring closure on our propensity to push.
I like that.
And if you don't rest, it is not done. You know,
that's radical.
It was radical for me when I heard it. In your story, I hear the words of a song that the Byrne sisters recorded shortly before you, or a few years before you left for college.
Okay.
It was Surrender.
Wow.
I surrender to the mystery.
Ooh.
I awaken in the beauty.
Love it.
And it's a song that is a Sufi prayer.
Oh, wow.
And so when we're on our agenda, we're pushing the mystery to reveal itself on our terms or to work it.
Okay.
As a paradox or a hypocrisy or whatever, we're going to make it work. But when you surrender to it, rather than try to force it, it becomes an occasion of appreciation and gratitude for beauty. It's the same damn thing.
Right.
You know, but the eyes and the heart with which you hold it and the way you viscerally, physically engage it changes entirely.
Yes. Yes. It's a total change. And in some ways, it's I can never go back. You know,
yeah,
but I'm okay with that.
Right, right. Well, you're not only okay with that. You have been redeemed, restored to value because you don't want to go back.
No, I don't. But it's so it's a discovery of like, okay, this is the work now. Awareness and awakeness mm-hmm. And kindness to self and others becomes the work and the real work.
Yeah.
Right.
So, is there a poem or a musical break you'd like to take now? And I'll do the station ID. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Amber Sky Harris.
Thanks, Eric. So this poem that I wrote was in April of 2017 during the thick of it, and it's called The End of My Rope. The End of My Rope. I had forgotten what it's like to feel like I've lost my mind for a long time, and now I'm at the end of my rope. I don't recognize the face in the mirror. I don't recognize the voice coming out of my mouth. I'm so tired, I have daydreams about sleep, like a mirage in a desert. I feel myself disappearing. I eat and eat and lose close to 30 pounds in 3 months from lack of sleep. I bend and bend, stretched like an infinitely thin rubber band, or like silly putty, but there is nothing silly about the way I feel. I want to break. I want to sleep. I keep making deals with myself like, Amber, I will take care of you. We will get through this. You can quit that job tomorrow if you want, and we will find another. And making deals with a divinity, a divine force I don't fully know, with forces I don't fully believe yet. With every silent, beating, cosmic force, every night, begging, please, 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 just let me sleep 6 hours, or four, or three. And then it's morning, and I'm up, and I'm exhausted, all because of stress and being past some invisible threshold that I never even felt when I crossed it. And now I'm long past. I feel alone in the desert of my insomnia. I must find a way to walk away from the stress that puts me every night at the end of my rope.
Amen. Even when you know that you're, I mean, I have this image from being in school and having to climb the ropes in gym class and coming down to the end of your rope, and the rope was just far enough off the floor you had to let it go. When you come to the what made it so that you, knowing that the rope was damaging you, why did you still cling to it?
Yeah, I mean, these are the, again, the stories and the habits we create to ourselves. Like, I have to hold on. I have to be in control. If I don't do that, things will fall apart. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I perceived that I did a lot of self-parenting early on in my life. And so I managed situations that, you know, were out of my control as a young person.
Right.
Or in situations where I felt like I didn't have control. And so this carried over into my adult life where I just felt like I had to hold on to things or else chaos would ensue. And it's a false belief.
Right. I mean, my father died when I was 7, almost 8, and my mother had been through a major mental illness when she was a few years before I'm born. I'm the 7th of 8 kids. I mean, and I had exactly that same role. And the ability to say, this is where I'm going to go. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but damn it, I'm going to get there. You know, and the drive that comes with that. I wished I could have turned a corner. I didn't last as long on the push as you did. I mean, I collapsed in my early 20s, and then I've had to kind of collapse at various times to kind of ease into this, because I didn't, you know, you need a community,
right? You know, it's so important.
Yeah, around you to navigate these things, and that's part of what I mean. The work I do through Shared Journeys is fostering groups of conversation about what really matters and building community, because it's
so important. I love Eric that you say community, because this is such a near and dear space to my heart. When I came back to town, I had had all this wonderful community that I'd had for decades, and I was able to meet new community through my partner Kathy, who was I worked at CCE for a little while prior to working at Montessori, and now I'm at Haefely TV. We met, and there was this phenomenal group of women who saw a need in the community for LGBTQ community building. There used to be places here like Common Ground and Felicia's, which has since moved to T-Berg.
When
I was growing up.
Common Ground was when I was in college here. So it was the best place to dance in town.
Yep. And so it's changed a little. And I think part of that is sort of this integration. But I feel that for people of all ages, there's still places to feel like you belong in community. So these folks also became part of my tribe, you know, and it became a really special group where we created Finger Lakes Pulse. We helped get the rainbow flag raised during Pride Month here in Tompkins County, in Ithaca, and Enfield, and Dryden. And a lot of those folks are still working really hard and were there for me, and were there for Kathy during some tough times, and we were there for each other in ways that were really important, like the kind of people that you can call at 1 a.m. and be like, hey, I am anxious. I need to hang out, you know, or
I just need somebody to talk to.
Can I just come over and hang out for a little bit or whatever?
Yeah.
And so those folks who can come in a pinch, right?
And when you're younger, coming over is a big thing. I worked a lot with older people, and they wouldn't believe that I wouldn't yell at them. for calling at 1 or 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Now, if it happened every night, I would.
That would be a problem.
But you know, to know that from time to time, or in a space in your life when you need something, others will respond without judging or damning or containing you.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful, and I'll give an example. I have a good friend, Rich, who I used to work with at Performance Systems Development, and I'm still friends with most of those guys who are software developers. I love engineers. So great. So fun to talk with.
They're accomplishment-oriented folks.
I'm like, these folks are great. I love being in the room with like smart or people who are just tackling big ideas. It's fantastic. You know, I called him up once. It was like 8:30 at night, so not 1 o'clock in the morning, but I was like, hey, do you mind coming over and just walking around the block with me for a while? Like, I can't get out of my head.
Yep.
And he was down for the cause, you know? Yep. It was great.
Let's take a musical break.
Okay.
And this is also near the half hour point, so I'll do the idea again, which is part of our program here.
Love it.
And you pick a song. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca, 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Amber Sky Harris.
Excellent. So this is Diggable Planets, Cool Like That.
Okie doke. Here we go.
Float straight out of our lids. Them, they got boo bodies, hard rock Brooklyn kids. Us, floor rush when they DJ booming classics. You dig the crew on the fattest hip hop record. He tucks the kinks and sinks into the sounds. She frequents deep, fatter joints called undergrounds. Our funk zooms like you hit the Mary Jane. They flock to booms, man, boogie had to change. Who freaks the clips with mad amount percussion? Where kinky hair goes to unthought of dimensions. Why's it so fly? Cause hip hop kept some drama. When butterfly rocked the light blue suede boomers. What by the cut? We push it off the corner. How was the buzz entire hip hop era? Was fresh in fact since they started saying Audi. Cause funks made fat from right beneath my hood. The pooba of the styles like Miles and shit. Like 60s funky worms with waves and perms. Just sending chunky rhythms right down your block. We beat to rap, what key beat to lock. But I'm cool like that. 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 I'm cool. I'm cool.
Queen beat the chocolates, taps on my raps. She innovates after sweeter cat naps. He at the funk club with the vibrate. Them they be crazy down with the five link. It can kick a plan than a crowd burst. Me, I be digging it with the bug burst. Us, we be freaking till dawn, peace and I. He gets a stranger smile, so I say hi.
What's up?
Who understood? Yeah, understood the plans. Him heard a beat and put it to his hands. What I just flip, let borders get loose. How to consume all the beaches like juice. If it's the shit, we'll lift it off the plastic. The babes will go spastic. Hip hop is a classic. Pimp player shop, it don't matter. I'm fatter. Axe butter, how I zone.
Man, Cleopatra Jones.
And I'm chill like that. 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 I'm chill.
Your feet, cause the clips be fat for us. Them thug the jams and commence to going off. She sweats the beats and asks me cause she puffed it. Me, I got crew kids, 7 and a crescent. Us cause a buzz when a nickel bets a dope. Him, that's my man with the asteroid belt. They catch a fizz from the Mr. Doodle Big. He rocks a tee from the Crooklyn Nine Pigs. The rebirth is slick like my gangster stroll. The lyrics just like Luke coming stacks and rolls. You used to find the bug in a box with Dave. Now he boogies up your stage, plaits, twists the braids, and I'm peace like that. Peace like that, I'm 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 peace.
Check it out, man. I groove like that, I'm smooth like that, I jive like that, I roll like that.
Yeah, I'm thick like that, I stack like that, I'm down like that, I'm black like that.
Well, yo, I funk like that, I'm fat like that, I'm in like that, cause I swing like that.
We jazz like that, we freak like that, we zoom like that, we out, we out, we out.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Amber Harris. I didn't use I'll use Sky. Should I keep using Sky? Because that was a fun
As you feel led.
Yeah. So you've talked about how you've had to change as one who kind of parented yourself
right.
with a fist as opposed to a kindness.
Mm.
You know, that's how you manage yourself.
Mm.
But how have you had to change your read of the world?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had to re-understand the nature of the world around you? I mean, how has that had to change as you've gone through this?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it changes all the time. I think it's always in process.
Right. Well, when you're managing yourself with a fist, I mean, that's my image. When you're managing yourself so tightly that you can't step out of line, then the world is a fearful place.
Right.
How did you release the fear to begin to see the wonder? What have you had to do to allow that to happen?
Right. So it's a lot of, first of all, I feel like that journey is going to be ongoing. Well, yeah, Let's just say that right off the bat.
If we are on target with the purpose of the show, we have defined one of your life tasks.
Yeah. So, but it's, I started doing meditating and Tai Chi, which were incredibly grounding and continue to ground me and myself, and started using kindness. And I think that I had started developing kindness prior to the last couple of years. It just became much clearer to me that I still had a lot of residual self-bullying that I had not been aware of previously. And that in addition to that if I felt triggered, I would bully others or feel like I had to somehow prove myself or somehow... this still comes up. I mean, this comes up, for example, even Sunday, there was an instance where I just noticed I wasn't really listening to the person talking to me, that I was formulating my responses before hearing them.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's really, really interesting. I wonder what's going on here. Why do I feel like I'm trying to assert myself? And am I able to pause? No, it turns out I'm not. You know?
Right.
And being kind to myself and saying, like, okay, so something's happening here. Let's explore that a little more.
And it could be you're racing, or it could be that this person is repeating a line. There's a repetitious quality to what you're hearing, and so you're already projecting it out, which means there's a problem on both ends of the communication.
Right. I mean, in this case, there was a dynamic at play where I think I felt like I had to sort of like prove my intelligence or prove my authority, but that's not always necessary. I think that we, in many ways, can validate more by listening more and then really hearing somebody and then reflecting back and to see if we're understanding them. Because what I've learned is that everybody is always telling you about themselves. So even if I were to say to you, you know, like I said earlier, that I perceived you to be a tall person. I'm telling you about my perception.
Right, right. I'm not particularly tall. I'm very average.
But compared to me, you are. So we're always telling each other about ourselves, whether we know that or not.
Yeah.
And so listening to somebody is really like letting them tell you about themselves. It's a gift. Truly listening to somebody is a gift that you give yourself and you give the other person.
Mm-hmm. But also listening to yourself and your desire to jump in. And that's a useful skill when you're in a work situation or a crisis where you need to move quickly, but we don't have to live in a crisis.
Yes, that's a great way to frame that. I perceive that as an accurate framing.
Yeah, and I do really, I listen, in most of the crisis work that I have done, that is where people value the skill set that I have: crisis chaplaincy, emergency room, gunshot wounds, families in you know, major accidents and unanticipated deaths, whatever. That working with staff around difficult conversations among staff or with families, that's where I have tended to do my best work because I let myself go and just immerse into it. Now I need to slow down in other parts of life to be able to have that kind of connection. It doesn't have to be that fast. It doesn't have to be that forceful.
Right.
It doesn't have to be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it just takes a long time to learn. For me, it's taken a long time to learn that.
Yeah, I think I'm still learning that.
That's what I'm trying to say exactly that. Yes, without kind of putting both feet down my throat.
I like the way Pema Chodron talks about it as leapettes, like little leaps. You know, leapettes. It doesn't have to be like full immersion, you know, like
yeah.
The leapettes are enough, because the way that you fill up a bucket with water is by drips.
Right.
And then eventually the bucket is full.
Right. What did you discover about the world that you didn't believe was true?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't think I read that one ahead of time. I love that. I like spontaneity. I think what I discovered is that each person is living their own reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're making up a collective reality as we go along based on our perceptions of what is true. I think that surprised me. I think I had known bits and pieces of that because I grew up in a non-traditional type of family where my mom and dad both were really engaged in the 60s. And then when they split, my mom worked 5 or 6 jobs. And so my older brother and I kind of left to look after ourselves. But we had this beautiful grounding in nature, which you and I talked about earlier, where growing up in Spencer, I had a lot of access to forest and stream and expansiveness, which helped me as a solid foundation later when I really needed something to lean on.
Mm-hmm.
That foundation of connection to the outdoors and connection to just the divine in nature helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And so later when I started figuring out, oh, people can look at the same thing or sit in the same situation or sit in the same meeting and come away with totally different meanings of what just happened.
Right.
And walk away with completely different understandings.
Right.
So it's
like they live in different meaning universes, different moral universes, different physical universes. Yeah. And I never imagined having the occasion for this particular, where I want to go with this briefly to come up in this particular show. So I come from a Christian tradition that was the first major religious tradition that was founded on U.S. soil in about 1809, and it was called Primitive Christianity, Christian Restoration, Campbellite Movement, Barton Stone Movement, or the Stone Campbell Movement, rather. And from 1809 until after the Civil War, it went from nothing to being as large as the Methodists, the Baptists, all the other major American denominations. And it did this in Appalachia and on the frontier and on those places, because the founding force was a man named Alexander Campbell, who believed that it was not only the right but the absolute responsibility of every person to interpret what matters.
Hmm.
Particularly from the Christian scriptures or from the Gospels and the Old Testament, the life that they want to live. And there need not be agreement.
Wow.
There only needs to be reference to some critical foundational text, and you can interpret it in any way, but you need to do that in community, where you strengthen each other and challenge each other, but your judgment is your judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And that notion of freedom within the community, which is to be who you are without a lot of judgment. I grew up, I see the effects of that teaching in a congregation where there was an old a couple of women and a couple of men who were born in the 1890s or 1880s, and she was the postmistress in 1915 and the mayor in 1930. One of the women was, and one of the men was a superintendent of schools in a neighboring district and lived with a farmer his whole life, and the superintendent was an elder in the congregation and the farmer was a deacon. But they came out of this tradition. The tradition was the only major religious tradition other than Catholicism that didn't split over the Civil War.
Wow.
Because they saw the hypocrisy of setting slaves free doesn't make them equal.
Right.
We have a lot of work to do to be with each other as equals. And
which
is respectful.
Which continues. Indefinitely.
And turning banks and railroads loose on the economy will not make it better for poor farmers.
No.
And we're still doing the same issues.
Yes.
But the movement split on economic class lines because the country was partially becoming more affluent, and people began to seek this kind of consumerism and cosmopolitanism, which isn't about diversity.
Right.
Cosmopolitanism is about showing what you have, and the more odd and the more whatever, the better on some levels.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of diversity of really dealing with people as they are different, which is what you're talking about.
Right.
Each one is a moral universe unto him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to engage.
Mm-hmm.
Without bullying, although we will always bully because we never know quite the force of our presence.
I hope that one day we will not bully quite so hardly.
Well, no, I think we can always viciously. Seek to do less damage.
Yes.
But the fact that we damage one another is because we rub each other wrong from time to time.
I think we damage each other because we damage ourselves.
Well, there's that too. But I think sometimes it can have either starting point.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of indifferent to where it starts because usually you have to go back and do the other wherever you start.
Thank you for sharing that.
Anyway, and it's a quality that I think people mean when they talk about wanting to have a spiritual life but not a religious life.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of that ownership of connections and mm-hmm. the power to determine and describe and to state and to be accountable to the connections that they determine and claim. It's a misunderstanding of not accepting the historic Latin root of religion, which is religare, to bind together again, religament.
Ooh,
to religament, Latin. To bind together again that which has been broken apart.
Mm-hmm.
You have established a religious practice based on the fact that your life was torn apart.
Right.
And you've had to piece it back together again.
Right.
So when I want to know what a person is made of, I ask them, what did you do when your life fell apart?
It's a great question.
And when they tell me what they did, they tell me what their religion is.
Mm.
Even if they don't believe they have a religion. Because mm-hmm. functionally, in a scientific, practical sort of way, it's how we live.
Mm-hmm.
We can't live without putting our lives back together again.
Right. I think people have, each person has a different interpretation of how the divine works for them or sure. whatever they yeah, call
yeah, yeah.
it or
yeah.
whatever.
But it's wonderful to get words. To know.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's this, you say made of clay.
Right. Yes. And my last name could be English or it could be German, Klee. And Paul Klee was an artist, a Swiss Fine. Jewish artist.
Yeah.
But it's pronounced the same way.
Very cool.
So and there's that ambiguity in my cultural history. We don't know where we came from for sure.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Which mystery is good.
Yeah. What poetry or music would you like to go to next?
So this piece I would like to share is called Those Who Love You, which is speaking to the gratitude to when we can really be our true selves with each other. Mm-hmm. Those Who Love You. You were born and I was born. We live lives. We live like we mean it, like we can taste it. Life tastes like crushed buttercups and dripping stardust. Here's the thing about the love for life, about the passion for joy. It makes people thrive inside. We love and laugh and cry. We dream, help other people dream, help each other dream, and help each other heal. We eat sushi together, and we cuddled in hammocks together. We wonder why people can be cruel. You sat with me in a waiting room when it felt like forever, but having you there made it infinitely better. We make friends with strangers and rescue animals. We love the forest, friends, family, and honesty. We love that certain trees can remind us of who we are on the inside, and then we mirror this beauty to the outside world. We feel magic, and also regular, and also fantastic. Love lights up a corner of life and spreads out like waves, or echoes, or ripples. Sometimes life is like that, you know, when you find those who love you and who you cherish back in just the same way.
Amen and amen. So where I want to go now as mm-hmm. we kind of mm-hmm. migrate towards the end of the show is let me frame this because we've touched on many of these issues already mm-hmm. and I want to kind of focus in.
Mm-hmm.
So as a person who had to parent yourself a mm-hmm. lot just mm-hmm. by virtue of the some of the chaos of your growing up and then overdoing it, which almost all of us do, who have are put in that position or who take on that responsibility.
Right.
How So you learn to care for yourself, to take care of yourself, but not necessarily in ways that were sustainable or healthy for the long haul.
Right. They worked. They got me to where I was.
And mm-hmm. and many people who have active parents also don't learn things that are sustainable for the long haul.
Right.
And now that you are learning more about what's sustainable for the long haul, and in the past year you were saying it even crept up on you in terms of kindness. Your awareness of kindness was creeping up on you over a few years before the events that completely shut you down and forced you to live a life of dependency and the interdependency in the positive sense. So now, as you take care of yourself, what do you do on throughout the day, on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly, yearly, to take care of yourself emotionally, physically, and intellectually?
Yeah, I just want to sit with that for a second.
Sure.
Such a great question. So each morning when I wake up, I try to meditate for 20 minutes. As either one of the first, second, or third things that I'm doing. And then as I am going to work, I try to set intention about, you know, today I'm going to try to be kind to myself and try to be kind to others. And, you know, let's see how it goes. Let's be open to what's going to happen, you know.
And let's not force it. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
And it is what emerges as opposed to what is forced.
Right, and that's the difference of, like, openness versus closeness, I think. It's really quite lovely. And so I check in often with my close friends and family, my tribe. I do volunteer work. I teach sign language. I was a sign language interpreter for many years, and so I have opted to teach a couple sign language classes at the Spencer Inspire Fitness Center, and I volunteer for their campaign fundraising committee. I have volunteered and plan to continue to volunteer with Finger Lakes Pulse. I volunteered on Annie Corman's campaign. She's a good friend of mine, who now sits in legislature. And then I'm looking to volunteer with Rev and looking at other entrepreneurs, because those of us who are leaders and innovators stand on the backs of our mentors in the best way we can give back. Same with, I think, people who have survived illness or come to a new, deeper understanding. The best way to give back is to share with other people and to help other people find resources. And so those are ways that I feed myself spiritually, intellectually. I now stop and eat, you know. I'm sitting down and I eat breakfast in the morning. I eat lunch every, you know, I snack throughout the day. I eat dinner. I pause for that ritual because it's important to my body and my spirit. And, you know, I try to taste the food while I'm eating it. You know, that's the difference.
Right.
And so the food is nourishing my body, but I'm also trying to pause in that moment. You know, I'm trying to step away. I go for a walk around Nichols Pond, which is near my work, and it's just, I see all these birds and this beauty and this nature, and that helps to feed me and ground me. So things like that, and spending time with those who I love who are important to me.
And what you're alluding to but not saying directly is that I put myself out there so that I can see how others react.
Yeah, it is a dance, right? It's a beautiful dance, and it's a risk. And that's the thing that I've learned that is great is I used to perceive this risk as a threat, and it's not. Like, really, all I have to lose is my ego.
Well, or if you, in certain situations, if you're out there, you could get hurt badly. I mean,
sure.
Physically or emotionally or whatever.
But if you're gauging it a little bit, I mean, you never
really
know.
If you have some skill and some judgment.
But a conversation doesn't have to be a threat. It can be somebody telling you about themselves. So even if somebody's giving me some negative feedback, I can either listen and take that in and see what parts speak to me and integrate those and then not take the other parts in that don't speak to me. Or I can totally shut them out and be combative, you know, and I don't have this down yet. I'm still working on it. But I've noticed a difference.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. It's, there's a, there's a sweetness that comes that's genuine, and it's not the syrupy, it's not sentimentality. It's a sweetness that comes from openness and availability.
I love this book called Jitterbug Perfume by Todd Robbins. Have you read this?
No, I haven't.
Oh my gosh, Eric. Okay. Fabulous. So Jitterbug Perfume, this whole thing is about lightening up. But it's beautiful. It integrates beats, and it integrates gods, and it integrates sexuality, and it's just this lovely, you know, book. Mm-hmm. But it's one of my all-time favorites because there's so much juicy content. Mm-hmm. As a writer, I love that. And one of the themes is lightening up. Like, we're living in an intense time where a lot of people feel quite polarized, and there's a lot of feelings about, like, I'm right and you're mm-hmm. not right, and right. this is this and this is that, and there's a lot of suffering, you know.
And it's suffering because of the way we hold what we think is right, as opposed to what...
Well, and there's a lot of real suffering, too, with people who are in poverty or people who are refugees.
Yeah, but that's different than ideological suffering.
Yeah, so yeah. There's both, yeah, right? Yeah, there's yeah, both. Yeah, 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 yeah. And I think the ways in which I, as an individual, can help is, like, being open to awareness around that and sending out positivity and also lightening up a little in myself so that I can bring lightness to others.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not always possible.
No. And when you go counter to your dominant skill, people notice.
Mm.
So the lightness will be a gift.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to take things apart and to muck through is your fallback set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and don't devalue it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very useful in a lot of situations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think there can be both. Yeah. I don't think it has to be either or. No, that's the lovely thing.
Yeah. So let's think about closing out with another poem and some music before we call it a day.
Thank you. I'm delighted to do that. So this final poem was a poem I wrote much earlier in my life. It was a gift for a friend who was in one of my art classes, whose mother was passing from cancer. And I barely knew her, but I felt such deep empathy for her. So this is called Rush, A Mourner's Lullaby. I know where the west wind blows between the cracks in your soul. I may not know hunger. I may not know cold. But I can hear your teeth chatter with each ring of the phone. I can feel the tears hollow out spaces in the places at home. The haystacks crumble softly. The morning sun feels too bold. Each day she grows weaker, the crack and crumble of bone. Reach help from the moon, silver chrome, and find hope on your own. My arms around you, your heart like a stone. Each moment more dreadful, each breath more alone.
And yet that poem is all about presence.
Mm-hmm.
It does not take away the solitude and the isolation of death.
Mm-hmm.
But we are present.
Yes. Yes. It's this is the other real lesson that I'm learning and continue to learn is the dichotomy of we're always connected to everything around us and we're always alone at the same time simultaneously. But the feeling that so many people experience of like isolation and aloneness, which I experienced in myself, is a little bit of an illusion because there is a connectivity to all living things, to everybody.
And it's a defensive reaction to not allowing ourselves to have solitude, which knows that there's another person or something mm-hmm. else out there that we're just not engaging at the moment.
Right. And there's also a blessing in solitude where you can check in with yourself and reconnect.
Yeah.
And so it's that, again, that two-sided coin, really.
It's not disparate.
Right.
It's not desperate right. or angry or disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah. what do you want to close with? I mean, I have
sure. So I would like to do the Rolling Stones' "Gimme Shelter," which I love, and I especially love the version with Lisa, which you may not. I don't know if you picked that one.
Probably didn't get that.
That's
one.
Okay.
With who?
Lisa is the backup singer who went on tour.
This is the original official version.
Oh,
this
that's great.
So this was 20 Steps from Stardom.
Oh, great!
Right?
I mean,
This is the one that was the hit.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Amber, it has been wonderful to get to know you.
Thank you so much, Eric.